Good evening and welcome to Series 4, Episode 2 of... I'm still not got the hang of this right. When Mike's been gone for how long?
17 years.
Oh, it only feels like 16.
I know.
But we're still not happy.
My beards are long, our hair is white.
Anyway, this... Even without Mike, this is Series 4, Episode 2 of the Tux Radar podcast. I'm Andrew Gregory.
I'm Ben Everard.
I'm Efrain Hernandez.
I'm Graham Morrison.
I'm Jennifer Roberts.
And we are where? And where are we?
Where are we, Andrew?
Oh, yeah, we're in the Westgate pub, which is where we recorded our Christmas special. Christmas special.
But we actually decided we have a lot more fun at the pub than we do it.
Yeah, you can tell we're having a lot more fun.
We've also got Gary here, but he's not saying anything.
Hello!
He's
he hasn't got a microphone, this is a bit unfortunate.
In case anyone's wondering who Gary is, he's our production editor. He makes us like our English right.
He makes us look awesome.
Yes, he makes us all look cleverer, which is sorely needed. Anyway, in this episode, we've got a welter of news, which we'll hopefully get through in the rapid-fire style, popularised or not by, by last podcast. There's the discovery of the week. Rants and Raves, our still pleasantly relatively new section. Speak Your Brains and the Open Ballot. And if we think of one in the next 45 minutes, there might even be one last thing. If you like the sound of all that and you'd like to somehow have a paper version of the podcast in your hands, you can subscribe to Linux Format right now at tinyurl.com/lxfoffer1.
So now it's time for news, which hopefully this week will come without any AQI or too many likes.
What was AQI?
Well, it was either...
What is AQI, though, Don?
we're assuming it's not Al-Qaeda in Iraq.
No, you're right there.
I have nothing to do with Al-Qaeda.
Yeah, yo.
I can't remember any of the other definitions.
It's not important, is it, no?
I thought it was just Aki.
Aki?
Yeah.
I'm assuming it's an abbreviation for Australian Christian Intonation.
Why was it not in all caps then, if it was an abbreviation?
It was in all caps.
Was it?
Yeah.
Not in the first one to mention it.
Yeah.
What, there was more than one person mentioning
it? But the second person was sticking up for me.
Cool.
So, anyway, so without too many likes and without any AQI, I'm going to try and do the news in lightning fashion.
I think you do the news perfectly, John.
Thank you. That's appreciated. So, this month, this 2 weeks, I don't know, XBMC has entered beta. This is in the news because I thought it was actually a final release, but I'm told it's a beta release.
Beta of XBMC Eden has been released.
Excellent. So XBMC, for those who don't know, is just awesome piece of home media software.
Yeah.
And Eden
Xbox
is the new
media
release,
center,
which no longer runs on Xboxes.
It's like a non-recursive.
Yeah. So anyway, I should do this more lightning style. Graham, what do you think?
I think there's also a release of Myth TV as well, but I've
is
not
there?
Had a chance to
wow,
check it out.
Wow, a great week in Linux Media Land. Yeah. Effie, what do you think?
I think it's great if it works. I haven't tried it, so yeah.
Cool. Ben?
Yeah, I had a quick play with it and it seems good.
Cool. Andrew?
Sounds great, but I feel sorry for all the Xboxes.
Yeah, me too, to be honest. Cool, that's XBMC Eden Beta 3. Look forward to the final
We should do
release.
Something on it. We should do something.
We should
it.
Do.
We did do a tutorial about 3 issues ago.
Oh, so maybe we should do a feature.
Yeah.
It looks really good. It's a really attractive interface.
That's the best thing about it, isn't
and
it?
And also, it comes with all the codecs pre-installed. So if you've had issues in the past getting stuff to work because you don't know what codecs to install, XBMC is perhaps the way to go.
They've just released a live version based on Ubuntu as well. And you can just switch between the XBMC and the regular Ubuntu interface.
Oh, nice.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah. Lightning news!
Yeah, sorry, lightning. Andrew reminds us. So, next up is new GNOME applications. Does anyone know about this?
No idea, no. I haven't got my notes anymore.
So, there was a Planet... Sorry. There was a post on Planet GNOME by, I think, Alan Day, one of the GNOME 3 designers, and he was announcing that there's going to be a new approach to designing GNOME applications.
Oh, good idea.
Well, yeah, but since no one knows about GNOME 3 applications and the post, then we should just skip
them. I remember that. It's to make them look nice and operate properly in full screen mode, basically, isn't it?
Basically, they're talking about maximizing stuff because having screens either side, having two windows either side, seems like it's too much for users, as I understood it.
Yeah, that's annoying.
I found that annoying, actually, and I really like GNOME 3. So.
Was it you who was telling us about some of the other day installing 3 or 4 separate terminal applications?
Yeah, that was
so they get old tab through them.
There was a really wonderful comment on Linux Weekly News where someone said because the alt tab switches between applications and not windows, they installed 3 different terminal applications just so they could get 3 different open terminals. But they didn't, yeah. Anyway, for those, anyone before they say, Alt and the button above tab will switch between windows of an application. Anyway, that's done.
Okay.
Raspberry Pi, and launch date, end of manufacturing date has been announced.
Yay!
Graham, what do you think?
Awesome. It couldn't come sooner enough.
Yeah, definitely. Happy?
Yeah, I can't wait. I can't wait to see it. And to see it working and in a box.
Do you think it's going to come? It's not coming in a box initially.
No. But if I mean, a cardboard box.
Some form of packaging in your hands.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Ben.
Yeah, it looks great. I'd love to try one.
Andrew.
Yes, I'd like to see it to check that the Raspberry Pi we have on the cover of this issue's magazine that we've just finished is actually life size, as we say on the cover of this magazine.
Yeah, we're going to look bad if that's not life size. Yeah.
We did check and double check.
So if you're interested,
it's only a couple of millimetres out, but don't tell anyone.
We're assuming that everyone knows what Raspberry Pi is, in case you don't know.
Yeah, that's a graphic design fault, sorry.
In case you don't know what Raspberry Pi is, it's a $25-$35 computer that's the size of a credit card and is going to be on sale on the 20th of February. If you want to find out more, you can see Linux Format's next issue, which goes on sale in about 2 weeks.
By which time?
I went and met for people who are making it, and they're really cool, and they really care about transforming education in this country by providing cheap, hackable computers for people to learn on.
I didn't realise they did it all in their spare time.
No, they're not paid for it. The university recognises them and says this is a good thing, but doesn't pay them to do it. The guys designed the system on a chip, works with Broadcom, but Broadcom haven't actively given anything through the development of it. So it's very, very cool what they've managed to put together. First 10,000 will be completed manufacturing on the 20th of February. Look forward to that.
It's great.
So new Ubuntu Enterprise Remix. Anyone seen about this?
Is that the one with some proprietary software? Mm.
I think it's with stuff VMware like Ribbonbox taken out.
It's got a VMware view, and it claims to have Adobe Reader in it as well, but that doesn't actually seem to appear in the live version when I got it running. But
so
maybe
they've taken out Ribbonbox and stuff and added Adobe Reader.
Yeah, a couple of different splash screens as well, I think.
But the really interesting point of this story is that you have to be registered to download it with Canonical.
That's because of licensing issues with Adobe and VMware.
Really?
Yeah. If you have a look on the little licensing thing that you have to click on, all it does is
reprint
it. I read
this morning that there's a license agreement that you have to agree to.
Oh,
yeah,
no,
but it is literally just the VMware and the Adobe licenses copied in.
Right.
That's all it is. Yeah, there's nothing more from Ubuntu in there.
Okay. Listeners, John's pulling a sad face.
I am. I wish you could see. Okay, so now that we know what this is all about, Effie, what do you think?
Anything related to Ubuntu now with this business, with the licenses, with Adobe, it doesn't come as a surprise, really. It's just going from bad to worse.
Strong opinions about Canonical and Ubuntu.
Yeah.
Andrew?
I think it's fine. I have no objections to Canonical trying to spread free software, trying to spread Linux and throughout businesses, like give it a bit wider reach. Hopefully it could be an intermediate step to actual proper freedom.
Okay, that's a positive step in the right direction. Ben?
I think it's just a marketing step. I mean, there's nothing in there you can't get from your regular Ubuntu with a couple of clicks through a package manager. And if that's going to encourage enterprises to take it up, then great.
Okay, cool. And Graham?
Well, I really like Canonical. I think they're a great company. They've done a lot for Linux. There's been a lot of negativity about Canonical and Ubuntu recently, and I think it's great that they're trying different things. I'm not too sure that this is the right thing to do. I don't think it'd be that successful, but, wish them the best of luck.
I think that's my opinion. It's great that Canonical are trying new things, but I think they keep tripping up and failing at the new things they're trying. That's my humblest opinion. And also, Canonical still in the news. They ended support for Kubuntu, or at least stopped funding one developer, Jonathan Riddell, to develop Kubuntu in his work time.
I think that's sad. I think this. I mean, I know you. Sorry, you didn't ask us for our opinion yet. But
no, you're clearly passionate about it.
Well, as a KDE user, but we'll get to that. I thought Canonical had money to spend 5 or 6 or 7 years ago, 6 years ago. Part of their remit was to contribute back to free software. One of the ways they've been able to do that is to employ people like Jonathan to work on Kubuntu and make a better KDE experience. And this seems to be the beginning of a new term for Canonical, maybe less. I mean, I know they've come in for a lot of criticism anyway for not contributing upstream too much, but this is a close down of all kind of peripheral activities, or activities on the periphery, I mean, and just focusing on their business.
On Unity, and
yeah.
It does seem a change of attitude has taken place.
Attitude.
But before we get too deep into this, I think we're going to wait, because we're talking about that in this week's Open Ballot as well. Okay. So we'll move on. Linux Foundation says Linux jobs are on the up. Andrew and Ben, you've discovered this. Tell us about it.
Well, yes, according to a survey through dice.com, which is a
compiler. Do they make compilers?
It's a recruiting website. They say that 81% of tech companies are actively looking to recruit Linux people, and 85% of tech companies say they struggle to find people with Linux skills.
So that's great news for us.
The moral of this story is go and get Red Hat certified or Linux Foundation LPI certified, and then you can get out of this horrible economic mess we're in and earn plenty of cash.
Did they say this recruiting company, did they say in which area of the Linux they need more people on?
No, they didn't.
Recruiting on?
They didn't specify, at least not in the report I saw. It was a worldwide survey, so it included reports from both Europe and America. So it's a global effect, but they didn't specify as to what area. I'd imagine it's almost all sysadmins.
I think very recently Chris Brown had a piece in LXF.
Yeah, just in the issue gone
yeah. about the same trend.
Yeah.
So his numbers seem to support this idea.
Yeah.
So definitely worth, if you have Linux skills, get them, you know, get experience in your favorite volunteer project or whatever, and go out, and then, you know, you can get yourself on the job market and make a handsome packet. So cool. Final story, LibreOffice 3.5 announced. Andrew, what do you think?
This is the one thing that I have no opinion on.
Really?
Yeah.
Hey, Ben.
From just a quick look through the feature sheet, the biggest thing for me seems to be the Visio import filter, because for a lot, maybe not for individuals, but for organizations, that's quite a big one. I think a lot of people have to read Visio file formats and not necessarily alter them.
Yeah.
I do have an opinion.
Yes, go on, Andrew.
Michael Meeks was saying in his column, in his as yet to be printed column, that they've been removing lines of comments.
Oh, German, the German comments.
Yeah. Why? Why is that a problem?
Well, they're translating them to English.
Oh, to English?
Yeah.
He said that they were translating them, he didn't specify into
what
language.
I think he meant
presumably English.
So they're leaving the German in there?
I hope not.
I don't know.
Why not?
It doesn't affect the run speed of it, because the comments won't get read by the compiler, will they?
No, of course not.
It just seems like, you know, part of the Anglo-Saxon English-speaking hegemony over everything.
Thank you for your political insights, Andrew. Effie.
I haven't used the latest version or the latest release, but I'm a fan of LibreOffice. I think it's one of those Leo Jameson. The Linux platform.
So a new release can only be
better. It's going to be better. Brilliant.
Well, I love spreadsheets, as you all know, and I really love the idea that now you can have 10,000 separate sheets in a single spreadsheet in Calc.
How many?
10,000.
That's a lot.
That's brilliant, because I'd actually got up to 9,999. I didn't know what I was going to do.
See, I started tracking my budget in LibreOffice Calc.
And that's it, you see?
In approximately 9,990 months' time, I'm going to appreciate that limit.
Yeah. Share the love.
Yes. Thank you, LibreOffice 3.5. That brings us to the end of this week's news section. Not quite lightning, but hopefully less light, so less AQI. So, cheers, guys.
Okay, it's now time for Discovery of the Fortnite. Who hasn't discovered anything?
I just said frick away from the microphone. I think that means me. I have. I got a really good one, actually.
I was going to let you go last, you know, if you want to think about it.
I got a really good one. Can I go first?
Yeah, of course you can, John.
Sorry, you just heard me in news, but I didn't care. So after our open ballot this week, and I suggested that no major distributions ship with KDE by default, and someone corrected me saying OpenSUSE does ship with... I felt kind of bad, because A, I haven't used OpenSUSE for a long time, so I could well have been wrong. And B, you know, I should actually find out what KDE's like before I say bad things about it and what OpenSUSE.
Nobody else bothers.
Well, I bothered. I installed
it for 10 minutes this morning.
No. I installed it on Monday and it's now Wednesday and it's only just been replaced. So So I installed OpenSUSE, and I found out, A, that actually I'm going to argue that it doesn't ship it by default, because although it's selected by default in the installation, GNOME is top of the list of options that you're given. I'd say that's 50-50. Anyway, turns out that OpenSUSE is pretty cool once you get it installed. I can't stand KDE.
So you don't have to look at me. I'm not responsible for KDE.
I really don't get on with KDE. I probably could give it a couple of weeks and maybe I like it more. But I'm just apparently
that's because you need a monk's cell of a desktop.
A what?
A monk's cell of a desktop.
Why do I need a monk's cell?
You know, minimalism.
Yeah, perhaps that's what I like. I quite like. You know, I don't know. I miss the Windows key more than anything. Of Windows and see my open applications and Windows and search and launch. So I turned out that OpenSUSE is an okay distribution. The installer is not as well polished as Fedora or Ubuntu or a number of other distributions, I didn't think. And I don't get on with KDE, and I don't think that OpenSUSE ships KDE by default still.
So a load of positive discoveries there from John. anyone else want to have a go? Effie.
I just dropped the microphone. Mine is not really a discovery, it's more like a little bit of a research. After doing the tutorial for Scribus, and what issue was that? 154?
2 months ago, 3 months ago.
Yeah, that one. I was struggling with coming to terms that there's hardly any CMYK support within the graphics softwares and Linux. And today I was...
Can you explain what it is a little bit?
Sorry, yeah, it's the color management. What you see on the screen normally is RGB, red, green, and blue. When you want to print anything, you have to use a full color separation system called cyan, magenta, yellow, and black. And if you are working with a desktop publishing, such as Scribus software, and you want to really you want to print it professionally, then you need this color management implemented on the piece of software. But GIMP doesn't support that. And if you're working with an image manipulation software that doesn't support and you want to print, then basically you've screwed, you can't really do it. But the discovery was that Graham pointed at a different application that is not very famous called Krita. And that does support CMYK management. And it actually works as good as GIMP. I'm probably closer to, if you use Photoshop, closer to Photoshop image manipulation management. And I think that's a fantastic step forward. If that software existed for ages, I don't really know. It's been basically a missing link within desktop publishing using a Linux platform, sorry.
Isn't Krita hampered by being tied to KDE?
No, I install it in Mint. Mint uses GNOME, isn't it? So yeah. You just use it. Yeah,
you just need the Qt libraries installed as well, I think.
I think you need the KDE libs as well.
The KDE libs,
I don't think it's detached.
But that's not a bad thing. I mean, I feel like we're going to get flamed for being down in KDE.
Yeah, maybe you all are.
But Krita sounds like it's an excellent application. As I try to dig myself out of a hole, I realise that Krita sounds great. I think it's really cool you tried it, Effie.
I think, yeah, we've talked about this before, but I think the graphic software in general suffers from, like, this black hole of the GIMP, which seems to suck up everybody's attention, when in fact there are lots of other small applications that are almost as successful and still being developed. I mean, the fact that the GIMP doesn't have CMYK is pretty inexcusable for a piece of software like that.
But that is the problem. I mean, there's a way to use CMYK with the GIMP, but you enter this, if you're not very technical, as I am not, you enter this crazy world of technical implications trying to implement the support within the software, and that's exactly what you don't want. You want a software that runs this support straight from the installation, and Krita does it, and I think that is great. Anyway, that's my
that's a great that's discovery. A really good positive discovery.
Anyone else want to have a go? Shall I have a go?
Yeah.
Mine's quite a good one, although a little bit too specific for most people. I've got a Fritzbox router, which we reviewed in Linux format, I don't know, 6 or 9 months ago. It's an ADSL router. It's a German brand that's very popular in Germany, and you can't run OpenWRT on it, which is the open firmware for lots of other routers like Netgear. But what I discovered was that Fritz has a thriving German community that have hacked the firmware and have recompiled it from the sources made available by the company that makes it, and then patched it and included loads of patches and added packages and also given you great instructions in German, which I don't speak a word of German, but Google Translate was enough, to rebuild the Fritzbox firmware and add anything you want to. And I wanted to do this because I wanted to run OpenVPN actually on our home network's gateway so that everybody could use OpenVPN, and it worked. It takes quite a bit of effort, but really nicely, they provide a virtual machine that you can open up in VirtualBox, download the source code. It's got gives you all of everything you need to compile it yourself and build packages and, you know, copy your new firmware to the Fritzbox, so it's completely open.
So it's, and it's all contained in that virtual machine, so everything you need to do it, is it there in?
It's almost all, you need to download the source code for the firmware. They don't include anything like that. But the environment is quite different, the build environment, because you're building for an ARM CPU. I think it's basically some Chroot environment inside the virtual machine. Straightforward to configure. But that's all pre-configured for you, along with all of the GCC settings and compile options. So really, you just have to copy a few instructions from the website and your own firmware. And it feels really satisfying.
So you've got OpenVPN running on your home network now?
Yeah, yeah. And it's really, building the root firmware, you go into like make menu config. It's like building your own kernel.
I miss doing that.
Yeah, it's really cool.
I just don't do that anymore.
And it takes 20 minutes, half an hour to build your first one. But after that, you find yourself making all kinds of modifications.
Yeah.
Like I made a modification for loading modules off a USB stick.
Oh, cool.
Because there's not that much internal storage on the router, but you can put modules on the USB stick and basically put anything on there. You can put Asterisk on there.
Awesome. Asterisk is a really impressive piece of software as well.
It's great if you've got a Fritzbox here in Germany, and if you can pick one up cheap, they're pretty good routers.
Can you order them worldwide?
Yeah, you can. You can. And in the UK, they're one of the few routers that support Annex M, which is one of the fast ADSL2 connection protocols.
Right.
It works well. It works better than my ISP's default router. That's my discovery. Freetz, it's called, F-R-E-E-T-Z. Ben?
Yeah, what I discovered was that when you're using Firefox, and on a rare occasion it does crash, and you get the little box that pops up saying send error report, and you click on it, off it goes. But that doesn't just go into some black box of development where they have a look at it. They actually publish these stats online. And if you go to crash-stats.mozilla.com, you can view over the last 2 weeks the ratio of crashes of all the different Mozilla software.
Wow.
So for each version of Firefox, you can see which one's crashing the most, which one, you know, how stable the alpha releases are.
That's excellent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you'll be able to keep tabs on the long term release, the Firefox 10.
Oh, that's interesting.
You can even see the upcoming releases. So I think they had 11 and 12 on there as well, the alpha releases.
Like the nightly builds. What do they call it? Aurora and whatever.
Well, they just have the numbers, and I believe it's just the. I don't know exactly which version.
Compare, so you can see how the stability improves as time passes.
Yeah, and you just get the little line graph showing you them becoming more stable, hopefully.
That's really cool.
It's okay, you don't have to if you don't want to, Andrew.
I discovered FOSDEM.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. It's really cool.
Are you just saying that?
I'm not just saying it at all. I came away infused. And full of admiration for really clever, passionate people who've given up their own time to, without any payment, to just to come along to from all over Europe and all over the world to go to this place, this conference, and give up their time and share their knowledge and their enthusiasm for free. And you don't even have to register. You don't have to pay for a ticket. You just turn up and sit down and talk to awesome people.
That is awesome.
And it's for free. It's great. That's kind of the big one.
And if you'd have booked your train tickets from the UK, say, 2 or 3 months ago, how much would it have cost?
It would have cost me about £70 if I'd booked them about 2 or 3 months before I was travelling. That's great.
That's even reasonably priced.
What about if you booked them a week before or even a few days before?
Then you wouldn't have been there.
It would have cost a lot more, but you know, being forward-thinking and well-organised, as we are, we would never have fallen into that idiotic trap of paying more than we had to.
I've got a question. If it's free to get in and all the organisation, How they manage to fund it, and where the money comes from?
They have many sponsors. They're sponsored by companies that care about free software and
Microsoft.
They want to give something.
Well, Microsoft to sponsor. Yeah,
Microsoft will sponsor.
We're missing on that.
Mozilla, the Free University of Brussels, gave up their campus. Bellnet, Qualcomm, I think. A few other, you know, telecom and IT companies.
Any breweries?
Cisco.
Any breweries?
There was some Sousa Lager there.
That bottle was really cool that you
some,
bought that.
Some Sousa chaps brought 29 crates of lager over from Germany, I assume, and they'd sold out by halfway through Sunday, but they were only selling it for €1 a bottle. Like, silly people. It's selling it for €3 a bottle. You'll still sell out, and you'll make three times as much money. Anyway. No, three times as much revenue. It'll still cost you the same to make it, so it'll be more than three times the profit. Mwah. Oh, the other one, the other discovery is that the Grand Place in Brussels, it looks really nice, but on the street behind that, it's just full of kebab shops and vomit.
Was that entirely brought about by Fosdem, or was...
There was a huge throng, a nefarious multitude of people all wearing black and having, you know, beer.
Too much to drink, yeah. Sounds like a really fun weekend.
It was great.
Excellent. Brilliant discoveries, everyone. Thank you.
We've now reached the approximate halfway point in our podcast.
Sounded like the talking clock.
We genuinely have reached the approximate halfway point in our podcast. Still to come, there's Rants and Raves, which could be John and Ben, plus one from a listener. I don't know. That's what the notes say. Speak Your Brains, Open Ballot, and maybe, just maybe, one last thing.
Cool. So, I was really unenthusiastic, but yeah, I'm joking. Cool, so it's time for Rants and Raves now. And actually, I think this week we're just going to go for two raves. We got Ben, who wants to rave about something. And equally, we have an email from a reader. I was kind of half-joking when I said this in the podcast, but it's a really cool idea, and I'm really glad we got one. So we'll have a rave from Ben and a rave from Pete Scan 21, perhaps. I should have written down the name in the notes. I'm really sorry, Pete Scan, but you say it yourself in the recording.
That side is quite strong.
In the recording. So, anyway, hopefully Graham's got a minute timer on his on his iPad.
Don't listen to him.
It's
drunk.
It's a Nexus S.
Very lovely Android phone.
I've just got an iOS skin on it.
It would be a Nexus S if Samsung had actually sent me some stuff when I asked for them. So we just have to refer to it as a generically branded Android phone.
Yeah.
So Ben, please rave away now.
Now? When? Now. No. Okay, I'm going to rave about Canonical. Now, this might be a bit controversial, and I know they've come under a lot of fire lately. Some of it has been justified. I mean, their lack of upstream contributions, you know, fair enough. But they've also done a lot of good things. Now, I don't know how many of you remember the Linux world before Ubuntu, but they really upped the game in terms of... Yeah. They really upped the game in terms of usability and just working straight out of the box. And now a lot of the other distributions have caught up to them, to a stage where in many ways Ubuntu is just another distribution with nothing to distinguish it from, say, Mint or Fedora or OpenSUSE. I don't know about... Oh, blimey, I'm almost out of time. So, so what I want to say is actually I'm really glad that they're taking it up a step and trying something new out. And even if they fail, if it doesn't work, then I just think it's a really great situation that they're brave enough to try something new and see how it goes, to take the Linux world in a new direction. And I'm out of time.
Brilliant. That was well worth saying.
That was
true. One thing, it's easy to overlook that Mark Shuttleworth made a huge amount of money at a very young age, and in that position, how many of us would have?
I would have run away somewhere nice and warm and spent all my money on alcohol. But
basically, he's done the two things I would want to do if I earned the money. He's gone to space and he's set up a Linux company.
Yes, you can't do better than that.
You can't do better than that, can you?
So that was one rave down, and now second rave, because this is ultra positive hour. 2 minutes. And we've got it on a phone, so we're going to play it through the speaker, through the microphone, and hopefully it will sound okay.
Yeah.
Hello, and this is PeteScan321, and I'm contacting you, Tux Radar, to rave about something really awesome. Linux's progress. I'd like to start now. And Linux has always been progressing. You know, not just the UI has changed. Some people complain every so often, you know, when a UI changes, but the operating system never changes. In the sense that it's always usable. You can always control your computer totally with Linux. And that's a big disadvantage, you know, Windows users have, that they always have the same system. The only thing that changes are the features, basically. Also on Mac OS, you know, for example, they released the iCloud and everybody's like, whoa, incredible. Well, you know, that's just a feature. It's different. It's not actually changing the usability of your operating system. And that's why Linux has always progressed, because there's millions of people modifying the system and everyone is brilliant. So that's one for Linux and zero for both Windows and Mac OS X. And that's my rate. Take care. Goodbye.
So that was Pete Scan's rave about Linux's progress, and we all thought it was awesome.
Well,
yeah, it was great.
Well, well said, Peter. That does. I think a lot of what he was saying does come back down to Canonical, that they've put an awful lot of effort in, and, we're all reaping the benefits.
I think, and not just Canonical as well. I think that all other distributions are caught up. You know, Linux has progressed so much because contributions have been made upstream. So, you know, changes to the kernel. The reason so much hardware works out of a box now is everyone contributing upstream, everyone sharing that progress. I think, you know, like Pete was saying, you know, so much progress has happened in Linux. I think it's a combination of Canonical upping the game, other people pushing upstream patches, and it's all really worked in our favour.
He's right to compare it to other operating systems as well. I mean, if you look at Windows XP, it's a million years old, but it's still knocking about. I mean, why is that cluttering up people's hard drives?
Yeah, no, move on to Ubuntu.
A lot of Ubuntu love.
Yeah. Anyway, thank you, Pete. If anyone else wants to send a rant or rave for the next episode, then please do send it to jonathan.roberts@futurenet.co.uk. Futurenet.com.
And .co.uk works though.
We'll put it on the podcast for the world to hear.
Oh, it's now time for Speak Your Brains.
We're normally better than this.
Are we?
Graham just makes it sound better.
Had some excellent contributions. Thank you very much for sending them. I'll start with this one from David Yang. He says, before I start with the email, may I wish 1,000 trolls upon your back for rejecting my last submission. May your successor have more wisdom than you in the matter of reading out XML and commands. Now, it would be kind of funny if I stopped there, but I am going to read it out. He's basically talking about Flash. Is Flash really so bad? You say it's slow, that it's closed, and that Adobe controls it, that you have to buy Adobe's expensive SDK, and that it's only really used to make horrible Flash advertisements. Is it really so slow? Flash is a compiled language, while JavaScript is entirely interpreted. Sure, there are overheads on the Flash player, but does it not have... Does that not happen with JavaScript-heavy pages too? It's not so much of a closed standard either. Adobe releases the entire specification of the SWF standard here, he includes a link, and they're very responsive to feedback. You don't even have to touch any of Adobe's products to work with Flash. You've probably already heard of LightSpark, but I can't believe no one in the Linux world has ever heard of the open source equivalent to Adobe Flash, Flash Develop. It's faster, lighter, and far less obtuse than its commercial counterpart. He goes on to say, Flash games might not be glamorous, but they're very easy to create at no cost too. Thus, they lend themselves very well to a single-man development. Great games like this, and this show that Flash games can be really fun and original. But I see people argue that the video tag is enough to make Flash obsolete.
I think, you know, it's not just a video tag that's going to make Flash obsolete. It's things like Canvas as well, and OpenGL graphics, WebGL graphics that are going to make Flash obsolete. He's right, you know, Flash, a lot of people do say, you know, the language is nicer, it's safer, it's easier to write in. But at the same time, it's not open source and we depend on Adobe for creating implementations for different platforms. And it is a processor hog.
It really is a processor hog, and especially in Linux, performance is just abysmal.
I mean, you think back a few years when we didn't we were stuck two versions behind the current version of Flash.
And even now, you know, is the 64-bit, you know, bug-free?
Well, yeah, exactly. So the main problem,
Another Speak Your Brains from Dylan Coakley. He says, hi guys, I want to say regarding the heated debate between Graham and Jonathan, Graham wants Ubuntu to just become more popular and Jonathan wants people to understand the spirit of open source and what it all means. Although I understand both points of view, I very strongly agree with Graham on this one and disagree with Jonathan. Jonathan, for the first time ever, Ubuntu is becoming popular in my college class, and without myself encouraging its use. So what are they using? Ubuntu, more Ubuntu, and Mint. As you can see, not a mention of any other distro. I think Canonical is the greatest chance to get Linux into the mainstream, and getting more users should be a priority over people understanding open source, as that can come afterwards. Thanks, Dylan.
So long as it does come afterwards, I don't mind. All I have to say.
Well, yeah, we could continue the debate. And, well, it's never going to happen if they're not using Linux at all. So even if a few people use it.
Yeah.
Does anyone else remember when we used to get accused of being paid by Canonical?
Is it sounding like that in this episode?
Well, I just think, you know, we started criticizing Canonical for things that they started doing wrong, and we didn't get a flood of emails telling us how well balanced and considered our coverage was.
Yeah.
So we might as well, you know, accept the shuttle with shilling once more.
if only we actually got paid.
Now it's time. Now it's time for open ballot, in which
I'm going the opposite direction. I dislike Ubuntu and what they do more and more by the day.
Say that.
I know I'm the least technical guy in the team. I understand my limitations when we talk about I don't know software and platforms and stuff. But I was a fan of Ubuntu, and gradually I just fell out of love with the distro. I think it's going in the wrong direction. If it is that great, how can they continue being consistent, and rather than trying and experimenting with new technology in the wrong way, which I feel Unity is, why don't they just consolidate the distribution in a way that is accessible to everyone and everyone understands it, rather than just when you get in the hang of it, of the distro, they change it and everything moves in a completely different direction. So, I'm sorry. I mean, Canonical can easily cross me off the payroll, but I dislike them now with a passion. Long live Mint.
I think that's a really interesting perspective from a non-technical
user. So, was that
the
rant section?
That will do.
That'll do, that's awesome.
Now it really is time for open ballots. We've heard in the news that Canonical will now no longer be sponsoring paid development of Ubuntu. So we asked, in the wake of that news, that terrible news, is KDE now a second-class desktop, given that no major desktops install it, as by default?
No major distro.
Sorry, continue.
So, yes, this opened a mighty can of angst. Much of it directed against John. What?
I feel like I've had a really bad 2 weeks.
You've not only criticised KDE for implicitly calling it a second-class desktop. You've also dismissed all those distributions that use KDE by implicitly not saying that they're big distros. So the likes of Chakra and Pardus. You've just dismissed out of hand. What do you have to say for yourself?
I really feel like I shouldn't comment after I've just drowned my sorrows in lilies, pear and apple cider. All a pint and a half that I've had. I have not a lot to say for myself. I appreciate that, you know, people who use those distributions, and they are great distributions, but on the whole, anything outside of a top four on DistroWatch to me is not a major distribution. And I stand by my claim that OpenSUSE doesn't ship KDE by default. Flame me if you will. accuse me of saying like too much, of having Australian questioning intonation, but I stand by my claims.
Would you like another lily? No,
not really.
As John thinks hard about his life and wonders whether he should have had that third half outside.
It's probably time to go to the comments.
I think you need a bit of a stiff drink for this one, John.
Three major threads have come out. The first one is that it's no big deal that Canonical has stopped paying somebody to develop on Kubuntu, because they never really had their hearts in it anyway. Anybody?
The company didn't have the hearts in it. That is not the person they paid to develop.
He was incredibly committed to it.
Can I say as well that we're focusing on Canonical and them stopping funding for Kubuntu? But another part of his post was that Aaron Sago, his funding is ending. And I think that's really important, because he led the KDE...
Plasma.
He led Plasma Design's efforts, which is a massive part of KDE 4.
Probably the biggest part of KDE 4.
And it's what's given it the flexibility to work on a ton of different platforms really well. And activities, which you love, were a part
of it. It's also what delayed it for such a long time.
Yeah, it's true. But, you know, and he's also led the EV, which is VX... I don't know what EV stands for. It's kind of for KDE board. So him losing full-time development funding on KDE is quite a big story that I don't think we should lose sight of.
I'm surprised no one commented on it.
Yeah, one or two did, and one person said they don't care because they don't like Plasma. But
I had a quick look on Google Insight for Search, which, if you haven't used it, is a tool to see what people have been searching for on Google. And if you look at GNOME and KDE since 2004, which is when their data began, KDE used to be more popular, and in around 2007 they crossed over. And
but,
now,
but could that not be the rising popularity in small little blue gnomes in parts of Finland?
It's entirely possible. But what I found particularly interesting is that if you look at it on a countrywide level, you see in Czechoslovakia, or Czech Republic as it is now, sorry. And
not like the good old days.
And Slovakia, it's incredibly KDE-centric. About 90% of the searches there are for KDE rather than GNOME.
What does Google say about KDE usage statistics in the Grand Duchy of Poland and Lithuania?
I didn't check.
I think it must be countries with a K in their name. They like KDE.
Kazakhstan.
Yeah, Kazakhstan.
Kazakhstan.
Czech Republic.
Moving on. Jerubi says, why do you even ask? I think we're reading a whole lot more into Canonical dropping official support in Kubuntu. Do we really want the project to be led by the great company that made Unity default on Ubuntu? KDE is still just as ever.
He can't even finish the sentence.
KDE is still just as... I assume there's a word missing there. KDE is still just as good as ever. I've only used Kubuntu once. But I was quite impressed by it, and I think, as distros Arch and Mint have shown us, community-driven does not at all spell disaster for a distro. Also, our very own Mayank Sharma, hi Mayank, says, I'm not sure why everyone's surprised about Canonical deciding to stop funding Riddle's work on Kubuntu. This is the chap that was developing, I guess. They seem to be consolidating all their resources behind their own in-house desktop, Unity. But will this have an impact on KDE's adoption? Not in the least. No, fair enough.
I think it does impact KDE's adoption. I think it matters a great deal that KDE is no longer 50% of the default desktop for distributions. I think it's sad for KDE, really. I think it will affect its popularity.
But you can still get KDE on Ubuntu if you go through the repositories.
I mean, one really interesting thing that we haven't talked about, although you can still get KDE through the repositories, people are just as likely to get XFCE or LXD or DWM or Enlightenment or any one of the other, you know, windowing desktop environments. I think, you know, GNOME has kind of taken the pedestal and KDE seems to be just one of the other choices.
But even before they dropped it, when you went to the Ubuntu.com website, you didn't just get the option of KDE. You went through and you got Ubuntu, the regular Ubuntu, unless you specifically looked for
that's
Kubuntu.
True, yeah. So it's not really a change in that regard.
You had to know you wanted Kubuntu. Yeah, you weren't sort of given the option, at least when you downloaded it.
KDE, although the question was about KDE, so many people mentioned XFCE that we have to really give it a shout out. Nia says, I went to the effort to try to learn KDE 4.8. I had a pleasant enough experience, if not very enjoyable. It just felt too big, not bloated, etc., etc. So I just went back to XFCE. Lots of that. Merely Jim says, for every turn in KDE, there seems to be three or four string wheels getting you there. Even though I know I'm in the minority, I'll stick with OpenBox or XFCE.
So one thing I kind of really think about KDE after using it for the last few days is that it's certainly, compared to OpenBox and XFCE, it feels really well integrated. All the applications work well together. It's a very consistent desktop environment. Even if it's not quite to your taste, I think you've got to respect the developers for delivering
such a polished, well-packaged environment. It's easily the best. It is the most integrated. It has a fantastic suite of applications that take full advantage of all the shared components available in KDE. And I also think with the release of Windows 8 and with OS X becoming increasingly dominated by iCandy and things like that, I think KDE is one of the only... perhaps the only alternative we've got to a free software alternative to compete with that.
Do you really?
But it's a completely different paradigm. Maybe Cinnamon fits that mold.
Even if it's a completely different paradigm, I must say, like, using KDE, I probably could have gotten by using it on a full-time basis, and there must be a way around this. But I've gotten so used to just hitting the Windows key on my keyboard to launch the overview, to launch new applications, to search for files, just the whole thing, just that one change. I've gotten so used to that one change, and it works really, really well.
But you can easily set that up in KDE.
Just to launch the K menu.
Yeah, well, not even the K menu, the small little command launch tool.
Or the Alt F2.
It doesn't have to be Alt F2. You can launch applications and search files.
You can make it look like anything.
But that's everything with KDE. It can do it if you set it up to do it.
Yes, yeah, that's true. And I do think KDE, you know, was suffering... KDE is still suffering from the effects of the 4.0 transition. And I do think the default configuration for KDE is poor. I do think that the blue glow around the windows when you first get to the KDE desktop is awful. And I think it looks pretty rubbish as well to start off with. And really, there's room for a very good KDE distribution. And I just wish people paid it more attention or at least got over those initial speed humps, because... You know, I don't like GNOME Shell, and I don't like the way that it's going. I still want a more traditional style desktop, but that gives me all the power that I'd expect, really. Mm.
Cinnamon. Cinnamon.
Yeah,
that,
maybe.
But that
choice is good.
But when you say, you know, they're still trying to get over the switch to version 4, that was years ago.
Yes, yeah. And I think this is the knock-on effect of it, because distribution switched then.
I got to say, I sit at the office. I sit next to Graham, and I always look at his screen when he's using KDE, and I do feel a little bit envious of how the desktop operates. My problem is that I know that you spend a few hours setting up KDE to work that way, and I think that's, in my case, that will put me off.
Yeah. I'd really like to see a tutorial on customizing KDE to get it how Graham has it.
Yeah, I have actually done exactly that, but it was probably quite a long time
ago. Because you have like the astronomy picture of the day as your wallpaper.
Now that was my own script.
To say your own script, you should publish that.
And then in version 4.8, which is the version of KDE just out, they've added their own scripts for grabbing astronomy picture of the day and also for the picture of the day from Wikipedia.
Which is really cool.
Yeah, I also really like iCandy. You know, and there's lots of that in KDE.
Sorted. Well, the rest of the comments are really just a KDE pro or anti debate, and I'm not sure it's worth going over that ground again. Sean says, I don't want to sound like the president of the Mike Saunders fan club, but XFCE is simple and elegant. Of course, that's because I am the president of the Mike Saunders fan club.
The one that I found quite interesting was one that pointed to our own poll on Tux Radar.
Oh, yeah, that's a very good post.
That showed KDE as the most popular desktop environment.
But then that also made reference to something we wrote a while ago when we said that OpenSUSE was the only serious KDE desktop. And we'd marked Kubuntu down on lots of things, which is
I did that round.
That's another argument in favour of Ubuntu dropping Kubuntu, not being all that significant because it never had that much love in the first place.
But I think maybe more people do use KDE. It's just they're not that particularly vocal about it.
KDE users are nothing if not vocal.
They're spending all their time setting up their environment. They've got no time to be vocal.
They're spending all their time attacking us for being anti-KDE.
I did think as well that poll was interesting, but actually, when we did the comparison between Ubuntu, GNOME, and Unity, GNOME, and KDE, that KDE came out on top as the most usable desktop, which I thought was really interesting. So maybe maybe there's definitely something there.
I do think they do a pretty bad job of selling it.
Yeah.
I mean, the way that they split up the desktop between... The main... I don't understand that. The SC and the applications.
I was trying to decide what to write for What on Earth next month, and my immediate instinct was to go to Planet KDE and see what new buzzwords were emerging from KDE.
That is so true. There are lots of problems with KDE, but...
It's still a great desktop.
Yeah.
And the loss of these developers isn't going... Or not even the loss of them, but the loss of full-time developers.
Yeah, I don't think it helps. It doesn't push it in the right direction.
It's not going to change things massively.
But how much of his time was spent customising KDE for Ubuntu? I don't know. And how
a lot of his time, I think.
Yeah, rather than actually working on KDE specifically.
Yeah, it's a simple answer.
He was working on something else as well, wasn't he?
I kind of think of KDE as quite like Drupal. All the elements are there, and you just have to put it together.
Yeah.
It's like a desktop environment construction kit.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Well, when I eventually scrape enough money together to get a mortgage, I'll want to buy a house, not a pile of bricks.
It's a good point.
Depends on the location of the land.
Yes. I've seen a nice little plot in Normandy.
I think that about wraps it up.
Is that the end of the episode?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have we missed something? I haven't got my notes, so I don't know what they are.
That looks like everything, unless Gary has one more thing.
Well,
no.
Just
I'd just like to thank everybody for joining us here in the Westgate Pub in Bath.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening. See you in 2 weeks' time. Goodbye.
Yeah, I hope you enjoyed the episode.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye.